You're listening to Show Me Your Mic, a show that interviews other podcasters about their workflows, gear, and thoughts on podcasting. Your host is Chris Enns, a podcaster who's hoping to learn more about the craft by talking to fellow broadcasters.
All right. Hello. Welcome to Show Me Your Mic. And as the intro voice guy said, my name is Chris Enns. I'm the host here. And if I'm a little flustered, it's because I've just spent half hour fighting with podcasting equipment, with recording equipment. So such is life with podcasting, I guess. Audio gear.
I'm nodding.
Mm-hmm. And yes. That's the voice you hear is my guest for this week, who is coming to me from Brooklyn, right?
Yes, yes, correct.
Anna Rasquet-Paz, who is...
Nice.
You're going to throw me off anytime I... From now on, it's just Anna. Now I got over that one. No, she's the online media editor at Annual Reviews, where she hosts the Conversation Series, a podcast that interviews authors about their careers and articles. And what she's teasing me about is that I was terrified of mispronouncing her name. And so luckily, or maybe I planned it for half an hour there just to stall while I... silently rehearsed your last name. As anybody who's listened to the show knows that I continually mispronounce people's names despite practicing and rehearsing. So welcome to the show, Anna. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes.
And thank you for not massacring my name. It's true because it's very hard to pronounce.
Yes. It's actually not that bad, but I just get a nervous tick in my brain or some sort of tick in my brain where I know how to pronounce it and then I think about it. No, that's the wrong way. And then just comes out football or something. I don't know. So you're coming to this show or to this series of interviews, I guess, with a little bit different background than a lot of the other guests I've had on, in that most of the guests, I'm not going to list or mentally can't think of every single of the previous 28 guests, but are sort of your typical, I guess, podcasting about a little hobby or big hobby as it may be, but, you know, something that they kind of just some nerd love of theirs or whatever, right. Or a business marketing kind of podcast. And yours is a little more like obscure in terms of like not the traditional what people think of when podcasting, but it's actually sort of where podcasting, I think, has been moving for a while, and we kind of keep hearing like podcasting is on the rise and then it dies and then it comes back again, apparently, even though the rest of us just keep going. So maybe just talk a bit about what the show is or the conversation series that you do right now, what it is and why you love doing it.
Yeah. So I actually started doing this thing. So now I'm a full-time, you know, I work full-time for Annual Reviews, but the way that I got in was by doing a few of these shows, a few of these episodes as a freelancer. And it's a science podcast. It's really great because we have access to an immense and really high-quality pool of scientists and academics, you know, who write for us. So we invite them to write, and they cover topics that are as varied as, you know, astronomy and sociology, biochemistry. So it's really, really fairly broad. I think we have like 46 different types of journals. And we get them to talk either about their article or, you know, their focus, their specialty in science, and how it relates to current events, or we talk about, you know, their life and career, what led them to become the professionals and the researchers that they've become, and cover, you know, issues that are dear to their heart. So so it's really, really, really interesting. It's interesting, a lot more personality oriented than it sounds. I've you know, had the pleasure to geek out on things like plant biology and political science, and it's been a lot of fun to do that. And you know, these guys are also at a stage in their career where they've already proven everything that they need to prove, and so they're very relaxed, very accessible, surprisingly fun to talk to. So you get a lot of interesting anecdotes, and you know, it's kind of cool.
yeah, so it's, you're sort of pushing beyond just, you know, recite your article for us or whatever. And, oh, you know, the audiobook version of article kind of idea, right?
Yeah, yeah. We try to kind of let their personality shine through a little bit, you know, and try and tie it to get them to comment on whatever is happening, you know, in the world at a given time. So we had a guy talk about, you know, the history of LGBT people just at a time when President Obama was coming out as a supporter of those rights here in the United States. And, you know, like we got him to comment about it. We got him to talk about how he thinks it's going to go from here. And we also had plant biologists talk about, you know, GMOs, you know, just the, this kind of big issue, probably more so in Europe than it is here. But this resistance to genetically modified organisms and crops and, you know, get them to talk about why the anti-science mentality has to stop in those respects. So it's pretty great. It's pretty fun.
Yeah. And so backing up a bit, I guess for you, you got your start, you're a journalist by trade and training.
That's right.
So where did you, mm-hmm. I'm assuming, where did you get your training in journalism?
Well, so I went to university in France. I studied, you know, finance, and international finance at the time. And I have no idea why I did that. I think I was trying to veer into something that nobody in my family really knew about, because I think I was the first one to do that in my family. I come from a long line of teachers and linguists, and so that kind of like came out of nowhere. And when I got there, I was like, this is all very interesting, but I would like to go back to something closer to writing. And after a couple of years of, you know, wondering what to do, I moved to London in the UK, and I got myself hired by Bloomberg News. So I just kind of got to combine what I studied with what I wanted to do, which was write. And yeah, so I got most of my training at Bloomberg News. I started when I was about 24 years old, and they basically taught me everything I need to know. I needed to know. It's, you know, it's like it's a great school for reporting. I mean, when it comes to writing, you know, it's a very kind of dry set way of doing it. But when it comes to kind of sticking to the facts and being accurate, Bloomberg for that was absolutely fantastic. And I worked for them for about 6 years until I moved to San Francisco.
And so, as part of that, were you doing like the interview type of stuff, or is it more like just researching facts and sort of reporting on the news, less, you know what I'm getting at is like sort of where you ended up now versus where you started. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, interestingly, I actually started at Bloomberg News as a producer, as what we call there a segment producer. So I was in charge of producing interviews I started with the Spanish channel of Bloomberg TV, and progressively I moved on to the European channel, so the English language channel that covers Europe. And so I did start with that, which I think, you know, has really shaped how I see things. So what you do is, you know, you find probably the right source for whatever topic you're trying to discuss, and then you just kind of research the topic to come up with a list of questions. And you brief your anchor, you brief your guest, and then you get them on camera. And it, you know, it's a really kind of interesting exercise, because I can't stress how important it is to ask good question, and it's a really difficult thing to do too. So I think that really shaped a lot of how I see journalism now. And after that, I moved on to the print side of Bloomberg News, where I covered bonds and currencies. I know, it's really boring. But, you know, it was kind of the same principle. Like, a lot of the stuff that we did was research facts and figures and get our sources to discuss those things with us and explain it to us, or just kind of shed light on some of those things. So Bloomberg is, you know, the format of the whole thing, you know, is very, very geared toward letting facts and people talk.
And so, just getting back to the, like, when you're producing shows with where mm-hmm. You're not the one asking the questions necessarily. You're handing your questions over to an anchor, let's say, or that kind of situation. Which, to me, I come at it probably backwards. And a lot of podcasters would be sort of the amateur hobbyists who just start doing this because they want to talk to people that are interesting, but maybe have never actually taken any sort of professional. Hopefully it's not too obvious, but I haven't taken any sort of professional journalism or training on questions, as I ramble on probably mm-hmm. too long for what a question is supposed to be, etc. But yeah, handing questions or a list of questions or topics over to an anchor, as opposed to just being able to do it yourself, was it sort of like an exercise in sort of frustration where you'd see, and I guess it would depend on the quality of the anchor too, but
I totally see what you're saying. I think it really depends. It really depended on the anchor. It also depended on the amount of time that we spent with the guest. The interesting thing about Bloomberg is that everything is really integrated. So TV works very closely with print. And so we would, we would get input from print. And sometimes, if the questions that they really wanted to see answered on camera didn't get answered, what we would do is, talk to the guest before, after, and make sure that we got that taken care of, and then send those questions or send those answers at least to the print reporter. Sometimes print people would come down and meet the guests themselves and do that themselves. So, I mean, I think it really depends. We've got anchors. We had anchors who were very, very good at preparing, at understanding, the kinds of news we're trying to break, and, others who either didn't have the time to do it or, didn't get enough time to prepare or who just simply thrown in at the last minute and had to figure it out as they went. So, it really depends, but as much as possible, we tried to make sure that those questions got answered. But it's true that there were some times when you're shouting in front of your monitor going, come on, it's like, that is not at all how I would have asked that question. So yeah. it gets interesting.
Yeah. And that's, so moving forward, I guess, and not that we have to do a complete career review of you, but like you had moved to San Francisco and at some point in there, and eventually you were the founding editor in chief at the Evening Edition, which is a sort of a web news, daily mm-hmm. news. I keep wanting to say print, but like at 5 p.m. at the end of the day, they put out a basically report of sort of the top stories of the day in web and email form, which is mm-hmm. done by Mule Design in San Francisco. But now moving into what you're doing with annual reviews, the sort of preparing questions and sort of now getting to just like, I'm presuming anyways, or assuming you do mm-hmm. your own research and then you get to ask the questions, or is there still a bit of a handoff where you aren't always doing the interviews and things like that?
For the podcast, I do the interviews myself. We also have a video series where scientists interview scientists, but for the podcast, I do all of that myself. So what I try to do is, I do all of my research. I read the articles that we have published, but I also read research that they've published for other publications, just to see, what they're up to and all that stuff. Just to kind of try and keep abreast of what they're doing. And then, so for a lot of these things, it's fairly easy because the articles are fairly general and, they do a good job of explaining why something is important and, why it should be talked about. But, others can get extremely technical. So for those, I read an article, from like 1 to 3 times. And then I call them and I confirm with them that I understand the science behind all of it. And, sometimes I just kind of like, so if I ask you this question like that, does that make sense to you? And, I just kind of a quick pre-interview just to make sure that I'm getting it right, that they're comfortable answering it. And just kind of getting ready for recording, because the fact is that I'm not a scientist. I'm really a journalist trying to figure it out. And so one of the good tricks for that is like, just explain it to me like I'm 2 years old. Like, just why is this important? Why should I understand this? Why should anybody understand this? And they tend to be extremely accessible and pleased that, somebody with kind of a more general background is taking an interest in it and making it accessible to a broader audience. They tend to really enjoy that.
Yeah, and probably some, especially as you get more obscure in the topics or whatever, then they're even more interested that somebody's just, or more keen on the fact that somebody is just asking questions about whatever the topic might be. But yeah, that was actually something I wanted to ask you, though, is like preparing for interviews with, you know, really, really smart people. You can, and or like socially awkward folks who do maybe don't want to talk, like they're maybe good at writing out what, as I fumble over my words, writing out what they want to, and what they have ideas in their head about, mm-hmm. but then actually talking about it, sometimes you can, it's not something they're as good at. And so how do you get to, do you just sort of decide who you're interviewing, the topics, or is it kind of chosen and you kind of follow the flow of the articles that are being written and stuff like that?
Well, I mean, it kind of depends. Like sometimes we get suggestions that come up and we try to make the most of it. And sometimes, sometimes I see a topic that I like and I just call them myself. The pre-interview is a good time to kind of figure that out, to kind of see how much editing is going to have to happen, how many questions I should have and how much, how I should pace them. So the pre-interview is a really good way to figure out who it is that I'm talking to and make sure that they're entirely relaxed. I'm sure you've noticed this. I don't know if, I mean, you're interview podcasters, so you probably deal with people who are fairly comfortable in front of a microphone. I don't know if it's the case all the time, but I find that the pre-interview in the case of people who aren't used to talking, kind of like a media environment, really, really helps to get them at ease and, to make them feel like it's okay. And another trick is, I tend not to be afraid to interrupt them because some answers can go on forever. But, it's kind of like the trick of it's the trick anywhere you go. Like you'll have answers that will be monosyllabical and you have to work around that. And then you'll have people who will talk for hours and you have to, interrupt them all the time. Just work with it. It's a good exercise though. I kind of enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely fun to do this. And I do have the built-in advantage of talking with folks who by their nature of being on a podcast, presumably are enjoying talking and probably I run into the problem of more having to interrupt than having to, stop or fill in space when they just give a one word answer. But, what was I going to say there? Doing the fumbling around, but preparing for interviews by doing a pre-show interview or a pre, what was the word you used?
Just a pre-interview. Yeah. It's like just a quick chat before,
right.
The actual thing.
Which is something I think maybe podcasters in general, because we could at times like it's sort of by its nature, it's supposed to be kind of casual and less professional and all those mm-hmm. kinds of things. And that's kind of the appeal of it and the attraction in that it's not the evening news or whatever. Like, but sometimes I think, having that option to do a pre-interview, either because of someone sort of getting a gauge for how well they are going to talk about something, especially if they're not familiar with doing podcasting, or to get over, I find anyways, for me, with often with guests, if I can chat with them a little bit beforehand, like even like you and I did or whatever, mm-hmm. then it helps overcome a bit of those pre-show kind of jitters. If it's someone, maybe a peer that you've looked up to, or like in your case, I would imagine like a really smart person or whatever, or a famous person, infamous person, you kind of get over that hump of having that first conversation and it's not the recording or whatever. That's often can help the actual interview go a lot better, I find. So
absolutely.
Coming out of your the training that you've had at like Bloomberg and your schooling and things like that, what sort of jumping off of that, I guess, with podcasting, how much of what you might have learned in the traditional sort of media realm do you think podcasters could learn? Is there other things that maybe you hear, I don't know how many podcasts you listen to yourself, but sort of see or hear going around that folks could maybe pick
a
up
few.
On?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I would say, and, just kind of moving away from the interview format, when we're talking more about the back and forth between two people or more, I think one of the things that could be useful is to script things a little bit more. I know there's been a trend to kind of go towards things that are freewheeling, where spontaneity is kind of prized. But one of the things that people tend to forget is that a lot of the stuff that sounds really spontaneous on the radio really isn't. It really, really isn't. And scripting is a good exercise because it, you know, it really helps you think about structure. It really helps you to kind of make sure that you're not going to miss any topic that you want to touch on. It also makes it easier to keep it contained, you know, not to kind of go on for a very long time and lose your listeners along the way. I find that a lot of new shows have actually been trying to do that a bit more, which is nice. But you know, a lot of these shows should involve a lot of preparation, or at least, you know, a minimal amount of preparation. And you know, it doesn't mean that you can't be spontaneous, that you can't have moments of surprise and laughter. But it's good to be able to plan ahead and to think in terms of structure. Mm-hmm. If not, you know, write every word that you want to say, at least just, you know, it's like, this is something I want to touch on and I'll spend a couple of minutes on that. And this is something else I want to touch on and I'll spend maybe 5 minutes on that, you know? So just have little segments like that and, you know, it makes the back and forth a lot more, a lot tighter.
Yeah. That's actually something with the way that you do your interviews. And yeah, I think this applies to both, like you said, to the sort of freeform chat conversation style versus you know, one-on-one or whatever interview style. But how do you actually prepare for interviews in terms of, you know, the research and all that aside, the actual, like when you're conducting your interview with somebody, what are you looking at and how do you have it sort of scripted or written out for yourself, your notes?
So I have what I script out is basically the intro and the outro. And I make sure that, you know, the introduction, the way that I present the person, all of that is scripted out. And then I have a list of questions, but I keep an eye. I mean, this is one of the things that are hard to do in formal interviews, like listening to the answer so that you can bounce off of something and make sure that you're not missing an important bit of information that, you know, your guest should be expounding on. But one of the things that I do is I write up the questions and I kind of organize them by large topics, just so I make sure that each topic is covered, even though I haven't formulated that question in a certain way. And I keep a pen at hand where I scratch out questions if the guest answers it ahead of time, or, you know, just to make sure that there's no repeats, just to make sure that the conversation sounds natural, which I know sounds kind of contradictory, but it really, really isn't.
Yeah, well, that's often, I know what I come up against too in this show is, you know, and it's happened in here and I should have maybe made a note in case we talked about it, but that idea of, you know, I have stuff that I wanted to ask you and you've already answered it. So it would sound kind of silly for me now to be like, and so talk to me about, you know, moving to San Francisco or whatever, when we've already covered that. And, you know, sticking to the script so rigidly that I can't really adapt.
Mm-hmm.
And what's any tricks or tips or advice you'd have to give on that idea of, because this is one I struggle with and I've struggled with it already in this podcast, where, you know, I'm trying to listen to what you're saying and mm-hmm. make sure that there's not something to bounce off of, like you said, and sort of, you know, go back and forth on, versus it being a sort of a topic ending discussion where you just sort of end it and it's not that it's flat, but you know what I mean? Like it's obviously done and we need to move on. And so now I need to have the next topic ready at hand. And any tips that you've come across there in your.
Well, I mean, you know, I just the way that I do it, I tend to be really, really, really prepared. I tend to kind of learn my questions, not by heart, but at least the order. I know exactly, like I've asked them, I gone over them. I have them very strongly in mind. And as you say, you know, when you come to the end of a topic, then be ready with the next one right away. So just so like, you know, just kind of don't be afraid of making really kind of harsh transitions, because that can always be fixed later on. And it's the way, like, just think of how a conversation goes normally. Like, you know, you jump from topic to topic without giving it too much thought. But what I would say is try and always stay attentive to the little thing that your guest said, just kind of offhand. It sounds kind of, you know, oh, it's obvious or whatever to him. And you're like, no, but there's something there. Like, what more can you tell me about this? So it's like your brain is doing about two things at the same time, but it's, you know, it kind of helps you, move the conversation along. It's like, okay, so thank you for answering this, but you just said this and that. Can you tell me more about it? Because it sounds really interesting. And follow your own curiosity as well. You know, like there's a certain number of topics that you have to cover just because of the structure and the shape of your show. But, you know, just make sure that you listen in just so that you can have those little moments of fun and, whoa, that was so weird. Can you please tell me more about this?
Right. Which is, do you get those opportunities with your guests where you're like, maybe I'm trying to think of a good example off the top of my head, but you know, it's sort of like what we did where, I mean, it ended up happening this way because the computer was crashing on me and we ended up talking for a long time, way longer than I normally would with guests. And so, which is kind of fun. Obviously it makes the interview portion even easier to do because we've talked about a bunch of stuff already, but
right.
Do you have that opportunity where you have somebody who's maybe they're on to talk about, like you were saying, like genetically modified crops or whatever, but then you also know that they happen to be this other thing, expert in this other area or interested in this other area. Are your shows kind of like edited quite tightly, or do you kind of get opportunities to sort of just expand a bit?
I do get opportunity. I try to kind of stick to a certain length because it is my understanding that, you know, it's easy to kind of tune out after a while. I mean, it's you know, listening to something is actually quite a demanding exercise. And this is something that everybody should bear in mind. Like, you know, podcasts are demanding on listeners because after a certain time, you know, attention just kind of naturally drifts off. So I try to keep it within 20 minutes, 25 minutes to half an hour. But if there's something fun that's happening, I absolutely let it roll, because if an anecdote is interesting, if something is fun and I know will keep attention going, then I absolutely use it. It's part of the reason we do this. It's to kind of add that color, that personality to, you know, very formatted scientific articles. So yeah, like, I don't know, like I remember geeking out with this guy, man, I can't remember his name right now, but it, you know, it was really funny because he was telling me about those little kind of balls that are formed at the roots of a certain kind of bean, like bean plant that, you know, that are made of. I mean, it's such geeking out, but I don't know why, it was just so much fun to talk about it. And there's like a, you know, those little balls contain bacteria that produce nitrogen for the plant to feed the plant, and you know, we just kind of went on to talking about the evolution of that plant, like where it came from and how we can harness this knowledge to produce even more nitrogen. Like, do you go into like things like, how do we feed the planet? Well, could we harness bacteria to make more nitrogen for these things? And, you know, just spent like half an hour geeking out about that. That was bizarrely a lot of fun for me.
Is that, I'm just looking at the list of interviews. Would that be Nevin Young, perhaps?
That's it. Okay. That's him. Absolutely. Yes, that was him.
So I'll put that,
that was him,
in the show notes in case you want to also geek out with Anna and Nevin about that, which you can find if you're listening. This is this podcast is produced or put out at sskTN.com, and look for the Show Me Your Mic logo, and Anna's smiling face will be, I think you're smiling, or maybe you're sternly looking scientific.
Sternly smiling.
Yeah, sternly smiling in the picture you sent. So it's episode 29 of Show Me Your Mic. And now I'm, after all that, I'm woefully unprepared for the next question. Actually, where I wanted to go is sort of stepping back into a bit of the gear stuff. And I know we have to run pretty soon here. But you'd mentioned in the pre-show or when we were talking that you're kind of like, you'd moved and you haven't quite got your gear sort of set up the way that you had it once before you moved. And so what are you doing, I guess, in the meantime, and do you know sort of what's some of the mic and hardware that you're using or plan to use to record the shows?
I mean, so I for all of this I have to credit Caleb Sexton, who is 50% of Mule Radio, in fact, and you know, he does a lot of kind of the editing background and the organizing of the shows, and you know, he's a good friend who knows a lot about this stuff, and he actually is the one who set me up with all of this. So you're recording me while I speak into a Rode Procaster mic. I normally have a setup. I have a mixing table that's sitting in a corner right now because I'm working from home now. I used to work in Palo Alto. I had my own office and I had a setup in that office. Caleb came to visit a few times and, you know, helped me set it up. But since I moved, I haven't really been able to do any of it. And Caleb is coming to visit towards the end of September, so I'm very excited. And I think I'll, if at all possible, get him to look at that for me. So like a couple of those mics, a couple of Sony MDR 7506 headphones. The FireWire mixer is a Mackie Onyx 1620i.
That's the same one I'm using. That.
There you go.
I don't think it was the mixer that caused problems for me at all. I'm going to throw Logic under the bus on this one, but it sometimes seems
Logic.
Like it's Mackie, but anyway.
Yeah. I also have a portable recorder for on-site interviews, which is a Roland R26 that I love, that I wish I could use more.
Why is that?
Because I don't know. I love it. I just love it.
Okay.
I love using it. I love the freedom of being out and about with it. One of the good things about moving out here is that I'm hoping to go do a lot of my interviews in person to some, you know, many of the universities that are around, like NYU, Princeton. We have a lot of authors and editors who work there, who are part of this whole, you know. There's MIT in Boston, there's Harvard, even south like Johns Hopkins, etc. So I'm hoping that I'll be able to travel a little more and do this on site, which I find so fun to do.
Yeah, do you, the stereotypical view of podcasters, and I fall into this sometimes, I know, is, and we were talking about beforehand, is, you know, introverted. I'm doing this because I don't want to sit and talk at the table or in a room with a bunch of people. And so I can control, if at any point I get nervous about the conversation or whatever, I can just kill Skype and walk away and I guess, or whatever. But that idea of having an in-person, either in the studio or in the coffee shop or wherever you happen to do it. Mm-hmm. Is it, most of them thus far have been over Skype, I would gather, and you're hoping to do it more in person? Is that sort of the direction?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've done a couple in person that, you know, and I think there's for some reason it feels very natural, very pleasant, and you know, you can see the person's reaction. So one of the things that happens both in radio and in video is that, you know, when two people talk over each other, it becomes kind of messy sound wise. And so in video, you're taught to react quietly. You know, you nod, you smile, you just kind of give them cues that are visual. In audio, when you're far away, it's kind of harder to do that. But I find it easier to do that when you're in person, to be able to give them the cues that make a conversation a little bit more natural in person.
Yeah, because, well, I mean, like, say right there, you weren't sure if I was going to come back with a question or if I wanted you to keep going, because we can't talk to each other.
For example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Insert awkward pause there. But, that's a detriment, I think, we were talking a bit about how I have things set up, too. And, you know, you're on a Skype computer, a Mac Mini on Skype that I don't have a video camera for. So there's no, I can't even, if I wanted to even have the video going, I can't actually see it. And I mean, not that I couldn't ever set it up that way, but it's just a little bit more work, and so you don't. And so, you get a bit of that overtalk and also awkward pauses that happen, and which leads us, I guess, into editing. Do you use what software do you use for editing?
So I actually keep it really, really, really simple. For some bizarre reason, GarageBand has been kind of amazing. Very basic, very simple. I'm actually going to try to talk to Caleb a little bit about that too, because I wonder if, you know, I could have more functionalities with you know, something a little bit more elaborate. But, you know, he's actually the one who said to me, he's like, you know, GarageBand has pretty much everything you need. I mean, my kind of show doesn't involve a huge amount of editing a la Radiolab or a la This American Life. You know, it's very much a conversation show and it doesn't need a lot. But I, you know, I wonder if I could be doing more with something a little bit more elaborate. But yeah, so far it's just been GarageBand.
Right. Yeah, that's, I think it's good to have that approach. I think too often we, well, nerds definitely have the approach of like, if I need to spend more money in order to get a better thing, I sort of fall into that trap. And so it's good to have the restraint to, because it does kind of like, there is certainly things in the gap, but you know, you jump from $15 for GarageBand or else it's built into your Mac to begin with to $200 for Logic Pro and things like that. And so you're kind of like, yeah, it's quite a jump. Yeah. And especially when, you know, in our case, for a lot of podcasts, it is really simple. And there are things that, in your case, that might make things go a little quicker, slightly quicker, mm-hmm. if using something like Logic. But obviously, like I experienced today, it also ups the complication level of device drivers and things like that sometimes cause machines to crash. And
I mean, don't get me wrong, GarageBand can be unpredictable.
Yeah.
it's hard to understand its logic sometimes, but, you know, like you said, you know, it's just simplicity really makes things easier. I use a lot of this gear, but I am not at all a techie person. I'm not at all a gear person. And so, you know, having Caleb help me out with all this and having tools that I can use very easily and very quickly makes my job that much easier.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, your goal and what you enjoy in it, I would gather, or from the way you're talking, is the, you know, the conversation you're having, getting good questions or getting good answers out of the guest and then getting it out there to the world. Whereas it's not so much that you're into it for dialing knobs and plugins and stuff like that, which that's, I know enough to be dangerous with that stuff, but it's, to me, in a perfect world, I would love to be able to just hand off the audio to someone and say, okay, you know, like what Mule does obviously at a bigger level, but like with hand it off to somebody and say, okay, make it sound really good. I just wanted to make the interview interesting.
Yeah.
And then you guys.
What a win gift for a producer, I got to say.
Yeah, exactly.
But you need to know this stuff, you know, like I berate myself because it is a great skill to have, to be completely independent and not have to rely on any bigger structure for it, to know how to do these things. I probably should kick myself a little bit more.
Do you, and so speaking of getting the shows or the interviews out, do you handle the web stuff and posting it and things like that and sort of the description and notes and stuff, or is that where you do get to hand it off to a online editor or whatever situation?
Oh no, I do everything. I do the recording, the editing, and I think you can tell I do the editing because it's really not like I don't know, I struggle with that. I spend a lot of time trying to make it sound really good, and it, you know, I'm never happy, never ever happy. And then after that, I just writing the blurbs that go with them and making sure that they show up on the website and online elsewhere, you know, so people know about it. I do all of it.
Awesome. Mm-mm. Well, I mean, obviously it'd be awesome to have someone else do it.
Oh no. Yeah, but at least I control that. Like I at least, you know, there's no question. You know, it happens sometimes when it's bigger teams where you're like, that's not at all what the guy said. You know, like there's like shouting that happens and things like that. At least I control it from start to finish. There's no question about that.
Because looking at the website for it, not to go too deep down the rabbit hole, but like looking at annual reviews, the site, and I was kind of just glancing through this about us and team. And, mm-hmm. You know, it's quite a big crew of folks involved in it. And obviously it doesn't always get a good picture just on the website of what's actually going on behind the scenes. But I wasn't sure what structure you're a part of.
Yeah. So annual reviews itself is actually, so it's a nonprofit. It's about 70 people at this point. It grew quite a bit in the last couple of years. For doing what I do, it's just me. There's another person called Andrea who does the video, who does the kind of the project managing for a lot of the videos that we do. And this whole thing about being online and trying to promote articles and authors has been a fairly recent effort for Annual Reviews. Annual Reviews has been around for 80 years. I mean, it's, you know, in the publication world, it's kind of one of the longest standing ones. And, you know, I was hired to do a lot of the podcasting, but also keep an eye on the news on a daily basis, you know, everything that has to do with social media, make sure that, you know, that we're there, that we're talking, that we're, you know, covering, covering the science that is in the news and offering articles that are tied to that. It is a big job. I mean, if it were just podcasting, it would be easy, but yeah. but there's a lot more involved, and I'm very lucky to work with a boss who really kind of understands what is required in, you know, the age of the internet, and has a really good vision for what should be done, and so I'm able to, you know, to do a lot of the things that I propose, which is very lucky. I have a great gig.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say, not a lot of I mean, podcasting, like I said before, it kind of comes and goes in terms of the overall, like, media acceptance or denial or whatever of,
yeah,
it, and becomes a buzzword for a while. And, you know, there's a USA Today article just a little while ago about how it's now it's come podcasting has reached its whatever, because, you know, celebrities and Clear Channel Radio or whatever are doing podcasting now, and now suddenly it's good again or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But still, to have an organization such as yours, or such as that one, to, as mm-hmm. Annual Review, to, you know, recognize the value of the spoken word, and, you know, whether it's like the NPR story style or more hobbyist style, but somewhere in between, you know, mm-hmm. that the value of having that out there as a medium, not just having a blog post interviewing so and so, but the way I forgot to prep you for this, I think, but the way I often end the show is just asking folks what podcasts they listen to, and then also just the app that they happen to listen to it on, just by way of interest.
But,
I don't know if you have something handy, or your iTunes or whatever you happen to listen to in handy, but
I absolutely do. There's a couple of podcasts there's two professional ones that I'm devoted to. And I cited them earlier, This American Life and Radio Lab. I mean, I'm very unoriginal in that respect, but the work that they do, both on a production level and on a reporting level, is amazing and something that everybody should aspire to. And then on the kind of more it's kind of hard to say that, because two of them are actually made by, you know, NPR, former NPR professionals. One of them is Decode DC with Andrea Seabrook, and that's on the Mule Radio Network. I really enjoy that. Another one that I absolutely enjoy and have found extremely useful, both as, you know, on a personal level and as a woman, is The Broad Experience with Ashley Milne-Tight. I think she does a really, really beautiful job of, and she's former NPR as well. And, you know, she does a really great job of bringing up the issues that, you know, women come upon in their careers, some of the obstacles. And she has really got me to think differently about my own career, about my own strategy for all this stuff. And it's been really great. So these are the two semi-professionals I was telling you about. And another one that I listen to that I very much enjoy is made by TJ Luoma and Lindsay, also on the Mule Radio Network, called Impolite Company. And it is about religion, which, you know, it's weird, but it's a topic that I'm very, very interested in, especially because it's such a tense thing here in the United States. It's, you know, it just kind of seeps through everything, from politics to economics. It's crazy. So I really very much enjoy TJ. TJ's very kind of level-headed approach to it. He's a pastor, and he does kind of a great job of decoding a lot of these things for non-believers like me.
Interesting. Yeah, I remember seeing. Yeah. You know, I probably saw it. a launch announcement or whatever at some point. I follow enough folks who are sort of connected, or else I follow folks at Mule and stuff like that, and probably saw it, but I never, you know, just don't always, can't listen to everything, but Impolite Company, interesting, and I like their little logo artwork they have with the Bible on the plate.
they do. So it's, so it's TJ Luoma and Lindsay Selders, and you know, they're, the two of them are on opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of belief and faith. And I think they talk about it in a way that I find, you know, completely accessible, very interesting, and useful, you know, like to think about things, just to think. Mm-hmm. So,
And that's like we joked beforehand, I think, you know, getting into a religious debate or a political debate for that matter on a podcast where often it's, you know, I'm not going to invite, most people don't invite somebody who they're going to have an argument with onto their own podcast or whatever, but and not, it doesn't sound like it's a argument each time, but to be able to actually just have an intelligent, rational discussion about things that too often descend into arguments and shouting and hate.
Yeah, absolutely.
So interesting. And so what do you, what do you use to listen to your podcast when you, what app? What app or piece of software?
Oh, the app. That's right. Yeah. So I'm actually very old school like that. I listen to it on my phone, and I use the kind of the Apple podcast app.
Oh, I thought when you said old school, I thought you were going to say like you make them into LPs and.
Oh, no.
Not that old school. Yeah.
Just kind of the iTunes podcast app.
Right.
No, not that old school. I mean, I have to listen to them somewhere.
That's an untapped market, I think, for podcasts. It's the whole, like, you know, hipster radio or LP record. Hipster podcasting. I think that's going to make a comeback, or maybe not a comeback. But
business idea. Everybody take note. Yes.
Somebody
records.
Send me a check or something.
So. But that would be an interesting time constraint if you think about it, right? Like, you can't go very much further. Like, just at some point you have to turn it, just turn the record. So.
And then you get the whole remixing of podcasts and scratching podcasts. Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah.
I think that idea has run its course in the 2 minutes we just talked about. All right. And where can folks find you, follow you, stalk you on the web?
Yeah. So I'm on Twitter. It's at Rascoet, so RASCOUET. And I also do a little Tumblr blog with a couple of friends, one in London and one in Melbourne, called While You Were Sleeping. And it's whileyouweresleeping.tumblr.com. And, you know, and your reviews, andyourreviews.org.
Nice.
So that's pretty much where I am. You'll find me.
Cool. What's the premise on While You Were Sleeping? Like, is it just kind of like stuff from that they're over there and they post something while you're sleeping? Is that
I mean, the whole thing started because Jason and I started flirting from afar, and I would send him little emails, you know, list of 10 things that happened while he was sleeping. And that's how it got started when I was in London. And then when I moved to, when I was in London, I asked my friend in Melbourne to do something like that. And, you know, we just started blogging together. And I would wake up and there would be something there. And when I moved to San Francisco, I asked one of my friends to do it from London. So now when I wake up, there's something there.
Nice.
From Melbourne and from London. That's the whole thing.
Interesting. That's a great idea. And I mentioned it on Twitter, and before we'll wrap up with this, I guess, but I was going to ask you about your flight home that you tweeted about.
Oh, my God.
Kid, or, well, not the kid so much as the...
It's the mom.
The mom, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's really, like, I have to give you some context. I had slept 3.5 hours the night before, woken up at 5, you know, ready to take the plane and kind of looking forward to chilling and sleeping on the plane. Although I have a hard time doing that, but I was hoping that, you know, I was so tired that I might catch a wink. And I was sitting just in front of a little boy who must have been 4 years old or so, who proceeded to start kicking my seat. And, you know, you don't say anything because he's a toddler and you kind of expect the mom to slow him down or at least tell him, you know, don't do that. But no, that never happened. And not only that, it just kind of got bigger and bigger as the flight went on, where I realized that she was actually actively stimulating both her boy, who's 4 years old, and his younger sister, who must have been like a year and a half or two or so. And, you know, the thing is, I'm not a mom. I've never actually had to parent, but there's one word that I heard my entire childhood, which, you know, in a French word, which is doucement, and can be translated into anything from softly to gently to slowly to, you know, just a word that says you need to either slow down, I need to calm down, you need to be more gentle when you do this. And in 6-something hours of flight, she never once used any of those words in the kind of lexical feel. Like it was bizarre. Like, what parent actively tries to keep their children excited? I mean, at some point they're going to want a nap. At some point they're going to have to slow down. At some point you're going to want to take a break too. Like, why are you actively encouraging them? This is crazy, you know? And so it's just like, it just kind of got to a point where, like, when I landed, I hadn't slept, I hadn't done anything. I could see that people sitting around us were equally aggravated. And she was loud. The two kids were loud. She didn't do a thing to calm them down or try to kind of respect everybody's rest. So it was shocking. Like, I had heard of stories like that of parents who, like, don't really, you know, or encourage that kind of stuff. I had never seen it in action, and I was just in shock. It's like, this is just unbelievable.
Well, as a parent of, well, not three kids, but I loved it because it was like, I didn't think you guys had kids, and I wasn't sure, obviously, what your life exactly contained as far as kids, cousins, or nephews, or whatever, you know, all that kind of thing. But it was like such a dead-on, common-sense thing to me as a parent. It's like, my worst fear of getting, like, well, it's terrifying getting on a plane to begin with a kid, especially a toddler. And then on top of that, to have them, like, and maybe this is part of being Canadian or part of being my background too, of like not wanting to offend anybody, but like having them upset someone else, let alone my own flight, which is going to be terrible to begin with anyways. Yeah. It was just so funny.
But I mean, the thing is that to me, it's not necessarily, you know, being, like you say, being Canadian and wanting to apologize for everything. To me, it's just, it's kind of common sense to, you know, there's a huge emphasis on calm, at least in France, like keeping children calm, et cetera. And I'm surprised that this isn't obvious to everybody, because it keeps, you know, it's kind of a good rule of thumb to keep children happy, to keep them in a calm environment instead of keeping them overstimulated, overexcited all the time. And not getting them to think about other people ever. So it's, I mean, I see it. I mean, I see a lot of my American friends are, you know, they completely see it. They completely agree with it. Like, just parents, you know, and they do it with their children. And so I just, my heart melts when I see a mom tell her boy, you know, oh, do that gently, 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 you know, like, it's not mean. It's just, and I would never expect a toddler not to behave like a toddler. Of course, that's really not the issue. Like, the flight that we took from San Francisco to New York when we moved, I had a little boy who must have been 2 years old or so. It was a red eye, so like all night. And the kid was completely agitated. He couldn't sleep, but the parents were so, you know, they were trying so hard to slow him down that I actually kind of, I stayed up. I didn't sleep, but I helped them. It was like, let's try and keep him, you know, calm, like he was climbing on my lap, you know, and I didn't mind at all because there was a clear effort to kind of maintain calm around that. That woman, she has no excuse. None.
All right. Well, I gave you every opportunity. You emailed me about swearing. And whether I bleep or whether it's loud, and I gave you every opportunity to swear, and then didn't even have to use the bleeper once. So, no,
I know. Jason is going to be so proud of me for me not swearing.
I should bet Jason is your husband, obviously. That's who you keep referring to.
Yes.
But on that note, we'll have to end it, I guess. But I just wanted to commend you on a lot of people who don't have kids have often no clue what it's like to fly with kids, and you have a very level head as far as that goes. Going back to having, you know, good discussions about controversial topics. And I appreciate your string of, despite being, you know, very frustrated, obviously, but understanding that ultimately it's this mom's fault for not taking care of her kid. And anyways, yeah, we won't.
You try.
Every podcast turns into a parenting podcast if there's a parent involved in some way. So I apologize for dragging you into it.
No. I have strong opinions about that. As you probably know.
Right. All right. Well, thanks, Anna. And thank you for listening to this. If you have found this somewhere on the internet somehow, on iTunes or whatever, it's available at ssktn.com. You can find all the links to the things we discussed in the show there. Like I said before, this is episode 29 of Show Me Your Mic. And you can follow SSKTN on Twitter at sskTN, facebook.com/sskTN. And I'm on Twitter at iChris. And I think that's everything. Thanks for putting up with the technical difficulties of the... I guess if you're listening to this later, you wouldn't know and nothing seems different. Apologies to the live listeners and to Anna for enduring the technical difficulties of this morning or this afternoon. There, that's how flustered I got. And we will see you next week for episode 30. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to Show Me Your Mic on the SSKTN Podcast Network. Follow along on Twitter at SSKTN or like us on facebook.com/SSKTN. Be sure to visit sskTN.com for interviews with other podcasters, as well as learn about other shows we produce, such as Welcome to the Internet, Too Lazy to Blog, and Lost in Lemon.